Hello and welcome, everybody. This is your host, Kendi Foster. I'm so happy you joined me for another edition of the Voices of Courage show. Today, we're talking about free will. Do you really have free will? Is free will, as the determinist may say, established by every event that happened up to now? Or do you have free choice? Can you really make free choice? Is there what we would call karma involved? Okay. What is this? What is this thing that we think that we can make a choice, stick to that choice, and see the results? How do we determine whether or not we do have free will? And if you don't have free will, then what's happening in your life? What is it, all pre-planned? Is it all unveiling? Or is it something greater than that? Do we have choice? And are the choices that you're making choices that are empowering you or disempowering you? Or is there anything even such as empowering or disempowering? Are you at the winds of the fate, or can you determine your life? We're going to answer some of those questions today and help you to understand a little bit more about who you are, what makes you tick. I'm not sure we'll answer the questions in an absolute fashion, but we're sure going to take a deep dive into this subject with my guest, who is going to be with me in just a minute. He's one of the world's most prolific and influential psychologists. And this show is really a show that I think you need to watch and pass on to your family and friends, because it's a show that'll help you raise your awareness, raise your consciousness, upshift your thinking so that you can have, I believe, more joy and happiness in your life. All right, I'm going to take a break. When we come back, we'll have my guest.
Whether because of discomfort, lack of mobility, your lifestyle, or occupation, you sit inactively way too many hours a day. Introducing Ellipse, the premium quality automatic seated exerciser that strengthens legs, increases mobility, and boosts circulation without physical strain or impact.
It is so quiet that none of my coworkers even know I'm using it.
Strengthen and tone your legs. Increase your mobility, flexibility, and balance. Plus, stimulate healthy circulation.
My joints feel better, my knees feel better, my back feels better. It makes me feel stronger too.
Perfect for home therapy. Whisper quiet to use while you work.
My circulation is moving, I'm burning calories, and it makes me feel energetic.
Call now and order Ellipse, the seated exerciser that strengthens legs, increases mobility, and boosts circulation. Call and get upgraded to the deluxe bundle. Get the faster motor for 5 miles of steps per hour, the step counter, the sport mat, and wireless remote. Call now.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Kendi Foster, and I have my very special guest, Professor Roy Baumeister. He is one of the most prolific and influential psychologists in the world today. Roy, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Ken.
For some of you that don't know Roy, he has published over 700 scientific works, including over 40 books. In 2013, he received the highest award given by the Association of Psychological Science, the William James Fellow Award, and recognition of his lifetime achievements. As of 2023, he holds affiliations with Harvard University, Constructor University, which is in Germany, Florida State University, Better Up Inc., and the University of Bamberg, Germany. Additionally, Mr. Baumeister serves as the president-elect of the International Positive Psychology Association. I guess I could go on and on. You got a lot of degrees here, sir. Amazing. Amazing life accomplishments. It's great to have you.
Okay, thanks. Yeah.
Well, okay. So let's jump into this discussion of free will. You know, I did a little pre-log on it. You know, is free will self-determined? Is it is it just, is it karma, I guess is the word that comes to my mind, you know, where everything is just showing up from the past and you have no choice but to go down the life path that you're going? Or, you know, what's your research shown on this subject?
Well, clearly people make choices every day and they're aware of making choices, and that is real. We live in a world as defined by multiple possibilities, and there are more and more of them. I mean, when I was a little boy, there were 3 television channels. Now there are hundreds and also multiple alternative sources. So we set up our world to live by choice.
Well, we do. And I think choice has to do a lot with personal challenges. And, you know, we make challenges that either seem to empower us or disempower us or sometimes have a neutral effect. But how does this, what's your research say about will and personal, overcoming personal challenges?
All right. Well, the term will is kind of a metaphor. We don't really have a psychology of will, but it corresponds to an experience that many people have of having to do things against their will, in which case their freedom is quite limited. So freedom is something that varies, that's part of the situation. And the human mind evolved to capitalize on those opportunities and to understand them and be able to mentally imagine, well, if I do this, it will lead to this outcome. If I do that, it will lead to that outcome. All of this is a big advance. And scientists argue as to whether it deserves to be called free will. For me, the free part is pretty much a given. It's clear some actions are freer than others, and that's enough. The will is a metaphor, but it's a metaphor for some real psychological processes. A decade ago, I published a book on willpower, which is really what got me into the idea of studying free will. And that comes from studies on self-control. And it seems like people's that self-control does depend on a limited energy supply. And so when people are tired or they have decision fatigue or whatever, they don't exert self-control as effectively. And we've done this in probably hundreds of laboratory studies, and other people have done it too. It's I think, one of the most commonly replicated findings in social psychology, that after you exert some energy or some effort to control yourself, to alter your responses, to resist temptation or whatever, then your willpower is down and your self-control is a little bit weaker for a while until it recovers. And it turns out the same energy is used for making decisions. So decision fatigue is sort of the same thing. Many people can relate to that. I remember one of my postdocs was getting married, and she did the bridal registry thing where you go to a store and pick out all the things so you don't end up with 4 toasters. But she said, oh, that was so exhausting. By the end, you could have talked me into anything. I had no willpower left. It's just the energy required to make all the decisions. And come on, it should be a delightful thing to do. And you know, you find it pleasant to make all these choices because you're deciding what you're going to get for your wedding. But
I want to ask you something. I love that. I like where we're going here, because it's like when you're fatigued and you make a choice. Has the research shown that the choices when fatigued are maybe not the highest and best choices? Or where does the research go with that? Yeah.
Yes, very much. There's several patterns. One is that, first of all, you become reluctant to make decisions, and so you want to postpone and so on. Another is leave things as they are, the status quo bias. So however things are set up, you leave them. There's a very clever study of that done. I wasn't involved, but some very smart people did it with car salesmen, specifically Audis, Audi dealers. And when you make an Audi, when you buy an Audi, you have a lot of decisions to make. So what the researchers did is get the dealers to just scramble the order of the decisions and see if you're more and more likely, because many of them have a standard option. So you just It's like leaving it as it is. And so as time went on, whatever the later decisions were, they were more likely to say, whatever standard. It turned out the Audi dealers already had an inkling of this effect. So they would start you off like, what interior fabric do you want? And you have over 100 different choices between the fabric and the color and the front and the back and all that. So you use up all your decision energy, your willpower, making those decisions. And then later on, when it's things like rust proofing, which you may or may not need, it's whatever. I'll take whatever is standard.
Oh, I get it. Okay, so So they can do the upsell when they wear you out, or yes, basically yes. You're fatigued, and now it's like, yeah, whatever you want.
Yes, yeah, whatever is normal or standard, or as I said, leave the status quo bias. Another kind of decision making is compromise. That when people have their full mental powers, they are strongly compromisers and will look for the best, even trading off, say, price and quality. You'll look for the sweet spot where you get the most quality for the least price. But as they get depleted, as we said, they've used up their willpower, they're more likely to say either just give me the cheapest or give me the highest quality. In other words, they pick one dimension rather than compromising between the two. So compromise kind of goes out the window. When you're depleted or decision fatigue.
Well, let me flip it on the other side. What's the research say when you're so that's depleted? What if you got a lot of energy, but now you're under pressure, like you're being pressured to make decisions? What does the research say about that? Do you make good decisions under pressure, or what have you found around that?
Well. There is a pattern in which people choke under pressure. That's more a physical skill kind of failure. We haven't looked at, as far as I know, a lot of decision research except under time pressure and things like that. And mm-hmm. and again, people initially, when they're in full possession of their powers, they can deal with the time pressure and so on. But as they get depleted, then the time pressure interferes more. They don't like having the external constraint, of course. So nobody likes being told what to do. But you know, initially they can perform. It's just again, your energy, your mental energy is limited. So you do use it up, and then you have to replenish it with food and sleep and a few other things seem to help.
I got to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the emotion. Also, you know, so we got mental energy, we got the physical, you know, the body might be feeling fatigued, or, you know, the mind might be fatigued, the body might be tired, you know, you didn't get enough sleep, or, you know, there's an emotional component to this too. So I'd like to talk about that when we get back from the break. We'll be right back.
Imagine this is your money and someone wants to take it from you. Who is it? The IRS. Guess what? They want your money and they can take it, all of it if they want. Remember, they sent you that letter right over here that said, hey, you owe us a bunch of cash and we're going to take it from you right now. So what do? You fight back by letting our team of experts work it out with the IRS so you can keep your money. And hey, we're good at what we do. When you hire us, you get a team of guys on your side that know the IRS laws and will fight really hard to save your money. So, if you owe the IRS a ton of cash and you want to keep it, call right now and learn for free how we can help you put it back in your pocket. 5 minutes of your time right now can save you thousands of dollars. And the best part, it's a free call. So please call right now.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm talking to Roy Baumeister. He's one of the world's most prolific and influential psychologists, and he does have a new book out there. I didn't want to mention that, The Science of Free Will, which I just love the title of that, and that's what we're talking about today. I take it anybody can get the book on Amazon or on Barnes & Noble or that those types of places. Is that accurate?
I believe so. Yes. Yeah. It was published just about 2 months ago.
Okay.
So it should be generally available.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. You know, is there an emotional component to the exercising of our will?
Well, certainly people do make decisions influenced by their emotions. There's a long-standing assumption with some evidence that when you let your emotions carry away with you, you're not as rational and not as careful. So the use of free will would be more to restrain your emotions, to calm yourself down and allow yourself to make a decision rationally. You do something in the heat of anger or something, many people end up doing things that they're sorry about and that they wish they hadn't done, whether it's telling off the boss or sending off an angry email or saying something unkind to their romantic partner. Those are often ill-advised. And so self-control is useful for restraining that.
Well, let me ask you this. Okay, in the book, and we can address it here. So how can we improve that self-control, that decision-making process? That's what I'd like to know. Yeah.
Okay. Building it up is not so much the focus of this book, but I had a book some years ago called Willpower that actually was a New York Times bestseller. And in that, we had a chapter on what you can do to improve your self-control and your willpower. It seems to work like a muscle, so that as you exercise it regularly, it gets stronger. After exercise, it's tired. And so, you know, right after you do some exercises, you may do worse. But in the long run, it will build it up and it will be better at all sorts of things. So the exercises, I mean, self-control is sort of overriding your responses. So you can do things like trying to break a habit. So if you're, we borrowed some things from meditation traditions, because meditation is a form of self-control and mental training. So if you're right-handed, set yourself the goal that for the next few days, you'll use your left hand for a variety of things, opening doors or brushing your teeth. The more things you change like that, the more effective it'll be. Another is verbal practices. Try to learn to speak in complete sentences. Don't say swear words. Say yes and no instead of yeah, yup, and all those other things. I know it's coming up here on the new year, and often I get interviewed about New Year's resolutions, because these are ways that people want to improve themselves. And totally, I favor self-improvement. But as we know, they are notorious for failing, and people will make a whole bunch of them. And by the end of January, they've mostly given up on them all. Well, I don't want to tell people not to make resolutions, but do them maybe in sequence rather than all at once, because since you're trying to change yourself, if you make five resolutions, you're trying to change yourself five different ways. All of those take willpower. And so working on one detracts from your ability to work on another. So what I say is start with the easiest one and pursue that until you succeed at it. That will strengthen your willpower. I mean, the Victorians used to call this character building, but it really is true. And it's been confirmed in modern psychology labs all around the world, not just my group. So you'll succeed at the first one. And then when you're ready, move on to the second one and put the hardest one off till last. By then, you'll have built up more strength so that you can succeed at that. I mean, things like quitting smoking are very difficult to do. But if you build up your self-control beforehand, and there is evidence showing this, that people do irrelevant things to build up their self-control, then they can do a little better at quitting smoking.
Well, I love that. Well, let's take somebody that wants to lose weight. Okay, they've determined, okay, I'm going to lose 20 pounds in the New Year's, and they've tried that. Maybe they've gained and lost, you know, 20 pounds many times over their lifetime, right? And now they're at that place. They've, you know, they're wanting to use this free choice, this will. They've created maybe habits of eating that isn't supporting that. Where does a person start with that? I love what you said. Start slow. Like, so maybe it's day one, I'm gonna plan something different or do something different. I don't know what does psychology say about that? Because so many people fail. So many people fail with these resolutions.
Well, yes, if there were a clear way to succeed at at losing weight, that would be well established by now. But we know self-control helps, but it's only moderately successful even with that. So to succeed at weight loss, for one thing is to get rid of the temptation rather than relying on willpower. So you get rid of all the chips and candy and other fattening stuff. I think the way is to move toward a healthier eating lifestyle rather than I'm going to do a crash diet for 3 weeks and lose 20 pounds and then be done, in which case you'll probably gain it right back. But go, look for a more sustainable long-term thing. Start by, maybe pick something with your breakfast that's fattening and switch to that. Replace the sugar in your tea or coffee with the artificial sweetener, or learn to drink it without the sweetener. That will already help. That'll be step one. Again, if you want weight loss in a rapid time, the evidence for this is not very good. And the people who lose weight, again, we talk about this in the Willpower book, the people who lose weight tend to gain it back and gain back more than they lost. The yo-yo dieting is really hard on the body. And it's not something we're designed for. So you have to make a gradual plan to do it. And of course, now many people are going to these weight loss drugs, which seem to be quite effective, and we'll see if that holds up. But it's a lifetime commitment. Yeah. It seems that they can't, as soon as they stop taking the drugs, they gain the weight back in most cases.
Exactly. Well, okay, so I think, and that's science, right? So you go on these crash diets, you lose a little weight and then you gain more back. You go on, a lot of times you go on some of these weight loss drugs, there's side effects to these things. So you lose the weight, but now you've got something else to deal with. So I think what we're really talking about here is more the science of the mind, using the the science of free will to start to really understand ourselves better so that we can make the changes that make sense, so that you're not maybe relying on something outside of yourself to fix you or make you better. There's a part of you that can tune within and start to understand, especially this topic about free will. And, free will also, of course, impacts our mental health, our well-being. I want to get to that piece of this as soon as I get back from this break. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. The book is The Science of Free Will. And for my listening audience, The Science of Free Will by Dr. Roy Baumeister, Baumeister. For those that you are listening, you can roll it back and get the spelling that's his name. And I hope you'll pick this book up. All right. I'll be right back.
Hi, everyone watching at home. We're here to remind you that if you or someone you know were injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have live agents available right now to answer your questions and tell you how much your case is potentially worth. Hi, I'm Gina Belich, here with spokesman and TV personality Tom Mustin with us in the Help Center. So, Tom, phones are really busy over there. Tell us what kind of calls you're seeing.
Well, Gina, first off, thank you for having me here in the call center with you. We always enjoy talking to the viewers and getting folks the compensation that they deserve. We're seeing calls about all kinds of accidents, but the most common by far has been car accidents. So if you or someone you know were injured in an accident that was not your fault, give us a call right now. You'll speak with a live person. They'll answer any questions you have and tell you if you have a case and how much your case is potentially worth.
Thanks, Tom. All right, folks at home, you heard it. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now.
Well, Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Kendi Foster. I will be right back with my guest, Dr. Roy Baumeister, in just a minute. I do want to encourage you to share this show with a family member, a friend, or an associate. That's how the show grows, but that's also how you grow and your family and friends around you grow. So I hope you'll share it today. Also, please click on our YouTube subscribe button so you don't miss any shows. Thanks. All right, back to Professor. Roy, the free will, its impact on mental health, on well-being, understanding free will and what's in the book, how's that going to help me with my free, with my mental health and my well-being?
All right, well, this is an area that is not developed as much in research, but there are traditions of looking at mental health or mental illness, rather, as a problem in free will. This is, psychiatrists use more of that language. The clinical psychologists use different terms like agency and so on. But they are talking about the same thing, which is your ability to control your behavior and get yourself to do the right things that make your life happy and stop sabotaging yourself. The problems with free will, there are a couple kinds. One is that, you know, your mental system is intact. There's nothing wrong with your free will, but it's serving a bad master. So the inputs to it. So people might use the example of paranoia, where you have a false belief that people are out to kill you or undermine you. So you operate on that basis. The free will part, where you're deciding what to do, calculating the contingencies and the problems and so on, that part is working okay, but it's operating on the basis of false assumptions about the world. The other would be more that something is damaging your ability to think about the future, to make an effective choice. It's sapping your willpower. So something right about maybe depression like that, where people feel they just can't get out of bed and it's not worth it. And they don't want to make any decisions. They don't want to go out and meet people. They don't want to do anything. So that's a deficit in the, in somehow the summoning up the energy to get yourself to act. There's nothing physically wrong with you. You could go out and go jogging and meet people and go to parties and dance and all sorts of things. But mentally, that's not working as well. So there are a couple different ways that free will contributes to mental problems. There might be a third one, but in any case, I've been talking to some clinical psychologists about maybe the need for a free will therapy for clinicians to recognize all this and how can we get people to make their decisions based on proper inputs rather than distorted views of the world, or how can we get them to summon up more energy to take action to lead their lives. As you mentioned at the start, I'm involved in positive psychology, which is kind of the other side from the clinical, tries to get people with serious problems to get them to the neutral state. And positive psychology says, well, the job isn't done there. We want to take people who are in the neutral state and help them flourish and be happy and so on. And again, that doesn't happen. You have to make the choices to put in the effort and the work to learn things and to cultivate your potential, to seek out opportunities and pursue them. And that's a lot of what free will is about.
That's good. Well, I've been a life coach for over 30 years. You know, I've come across a lot of individuals that have done a lot of therapy, and now they're at that next level. They're ready to take their life to the next level. A lot of times, I like what you said about false assumptions. I think, you know, if my audience is here, it's like, well, how do I know if I've got false assumptions in life? Well, I can tell you this, is that you look at your results, okay? So if you don't like your results that you're getting, let's say in your health, your fitness, or in your relationships, or in your business, or whatever area, your friendships, if you don't like the results and there's some patterns there, then it's really, from my point of view, you'd have some false assumptions about how these areas work. And I think that's where you start. You really have to get clear with yourself, what's working in my life, what's not working in my life, And if it's not working, you know, what can I do to improve it? If you don't know what that is, then you probably have some false assumptions that Dr. Roy was talking about here. So I think it's important to understand that. And I think there's another piece, especially the self-esteem piece that we're kind of bouncing around. You know, when you consistently, from my experience, when a person consistently says they're going to do something and they don't do it, they procrastinate. That procrastination seems to chip away at their willpower or their self-esteem. And I'd like to get your feedback on that. Is that research out there like that, or what do you know about that?
All right. I spent early part of my career, I did a lot of research with self-esteem. It's something we can measure pretty well in psychology. We thought it was going to be crucial to a lot of things about success in life. The results were fairly disappointing with self-esteem, and that's why I kind of put it on the back burner and instead shifted to self-control, which has much more power to do things good. And indeed, I advise parents and coaches and teachers and others who work with young people, forget about self-esteem, concentrate on building self-control. Self-control does lead to success in life and cause a lot of positive results. And that gives you then a strong basis for self-esteem, rather than just telling the young person, "Oh, you're
great." I love that. But so many people are seeking pleasure in life, right? Self-control usually says, "Well, okay, I got to have some discipline in there." So how do you help people with that piece, right?
Right. Well, I think that's been figured out for a long time. The ancient wisdom of work hard, play hard. I'm totally in favor of having pleasure in life. But the way I was brought up, and which has worked well for me, is you got to work first, do your work and earn it, and then reward yourself. So, I don't usually like to talk about my own life, but I work every day pretty hard. And then at the end of the day, I like to have some fun and some pleasure to reward myself. And if the work didn't go well, maybe I don't reward myself as much. Yeah. But putting it that way, using the pleasure as a reward, that encourages you to succeed, and it puts your self-discipline to work. So that contributes to planning things. You mentioned procrastination. Mm-hmm. My strategy, which I advise all the young people who've worked with me, and I don't know if they listen to me or not, but get in the habit of doing everything way before the deadline is imminent. As if you're doing things all at the last minute, and in my profession, professors, a lot of us fall into that trap of, you know, just living deadline to deadline. But that's a very stressful way to live, and you don't have control over your life and so on. And, oh my God, if something goes wrong at the last minute, which in research often it does, then there's a crisis. Whereas if you're a month ahead of the deadline, you have to go back and redo the statistics, you know, from a different a set of assumptions. Okay, no problem. We got a month. It's not due yet. So procrastination makes life work. We did several big studies. My wife Diane Tyson and I did this with students, looking at the procrastinators or not. We tracked their health, and in the middle of the semester, the procrastinators are actually a little bit healthier, measured by their visits to student health center and things like that. They did worse on all the exams and the term paper. They got lower grades. So procrastination is definitely a self-destructive approach to life. But their health was better. So we were looking at initially as a trade-off, but I said, well, we just looked at the health early in the semester before the deadlines. We need to follow through and go right to the end. And sure enough, the procrastinators were so much sicker at the end of the semester that it offset the advantage that they had earlier and made them even net sicker. So it damages your health too. It's a short-term gain, long-term cost, which is a classic formula for self-destructive behavior.
Definitely. And I love what you just said about that. That's such an important piece for individuals that are currently procrastinating. And, you know, if that's you, it's, you know, denial is what they said. Denial is not a river in Egypt, right? It's something that you you live in. And so the first step is to be self truthful with oneself, with the results you're getting. And I like what you
said. Your own timetable.
Yeah.
Go ahead. You set your own goals. You set the time. So if it's due April 1st, well, you're going to get it done in February. And if it slips over into early March because there's a delay, all right, not too bad. But still, you're not there the final week of March. Oh, my God. Cutting corners and ultimately lowering the quality of your work.
Did you ever do a study? Has there any study been done around procrastinators and those that show up late at meetings, show up late to class? Is that part of that procrastination piece, or is that something else? Is that linked?
Well, I assume in many cases it's part of the low self-control, so you don't get it done until the last minute, so you don't show up to the last minute. Other people do it deliberately. I remember back when I was in graduate school, I briefly dated a lovely woman who was a medical student, and she said, it's my strategy, because if you show up early, you just waste time for the other people. So I always show up late. I'm going to be a medical doctor, and there's going to be time pressure on me all over. So I got to figure out a strategy. So there are people who legitimately do that, showing up a few minutes late. Let others start. And it's true. I tend to be on time and you end up sitting around waiting for the thing to start. But nevertheless, I'd say the majority is that it's tied to the same thing. You can't get yourself there. That, you know, you tell yourself, oh, I got to be there at 1 o'clock. Well, the person, once you learn to set goals for yourself, it's important to be there at 1 o'clock. You say, I'm going to be there at 1:45.
Yeah.
And I'll be ready and I'll have something else to do in the meantime if I have to wait. But I don't want other people to have to wait for me, and I don't want to miss out on something important that's decided early in the meeting before I got there.
I can't tell you how many connections I've made over the years by showing up early to events. It's such a win. It's that old adage, the early bird gets the worm. Yeah, that's true. You get there early. And what I tell my clients is that if they're having that challenge with always being late, I just say, hey, listen, just reset what on time means. Okay. Yeah. On time to you now means 10 minutes early. That's all. You just reset it.
Right.
Redefine it. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, that's true. There's a funny story when we were running the experiment with the procrastinators in my wife's class. So she gave them a due date, which was not a date that the class met. So it's due this particular day, and you have to bring it into the department and put it in her mailbox. She said, if you can't make it, you don't need to call me. You can automatically give yourself an extension to the next class. And if you can't make that, you can have an automatic extension until Friday. That's the last day of classes, and that's the very final thing. So they could automatically give themselves two extensions. And she said some of the procrastinators just wrote down the third date as the real due date. So they're already setting themselves up for failure. They ignored the original due date. Whereas I'll bet, you know, people who live more in my strategy probably said, well, I'm going to have it done a week before the original due date. And that way you don't have all the deadline stress. And deadline stress really spoils the joy of working in many ways for a lot of people. You can live without it. All you have to do is set your own deadlines a bit early. There are some punishments, actually. You say the early bird gets the word, that gets the worm. Sometimes the early bird gets asked to do more.
That can happen. That can happen, yeah. That's fine. Hey, listen, I got to take a break. But when we come back, I want to talk about what limitations does the human mind face in exercising free will, according to your findings. So we'll be right back. We'll talk about that. We'll be right back.
Hi, folks. Joe Namath here. Did you know that I wear hearing aids? I love my hearing aids, and I am here to help you get a deal on the same brand I wear.
Don't waste thousands on expensive hearing aids when you can get MD Hearing's revolutionary Neo hearing aids for just $297 a pair. The Neo is a true hearing aid, not an amplifier. With rechargeable technology, many customers say is superior to more expensive models. And you can get two Neo hearing aids with a 45-day risk-free trial, free shipping, and free lifetime U.S.-based support for only $297. The Neo is nearly invisible with its tiny in-the-ear canal design.
Call my friends at MD Hearing and get the over-the-counter hearing aids that I use for you.
Call now and get not one, but two Neo hearing aids for just $297.
800-789-7885. Again, that's 800-789-7885.
Well, welcome back, everybody. The show is Ken D. Foster. I'm talking to Professor Roy Baumeister. He's one of the world's most prolific and influential psychologists today. We're talking about his new book. He's got an amazing new book out there. It's called The Science of Free Will. The Science of Free Will. And this book is a book that I believe will help you understand how your mind works and go down deep into some of the, probably answer some of the questions you've had about will, free will, and be able to help you step into really feeling, I don't know if feeling is a word, understanding your capacity in a much greater way. Can we talk about the limitations the human mind faces in exercising free will?
All right, of course. So the first point is freedom is often in the situation. It's not something your mind creates. Your mind capitalizes on it. So some situations just don't give you much free will. You know, if you're in the military and you get a command from your commanding officer, it's not really up to you. Do I want to do that? So there's certainly situations like that. But let's go for the others where you do have some flexibility and you do have some degree of choice. As I said, one of the biggest limitations is the limited willpower. And so when you're fresh and you had a good night's sleep and you haven't had too many demands on you, you can really consider carefully and sort of set your emotions aside if they are interfering. And think about what is the best thing, what is the logical thing to do, what won't I be sorry in the future for having done now. When willpower is limited, depleted, people don't do that as effectively, and they start to cut corners, and they start to make decisions in more of a simple, simplistic even fashion. Which, as I said, the compromise takes more complex thinking. That goes out the window. There's others. You have a lot of information in a choice. Some of it is relevant, some not. And so you want to think through logically which parts of what should really enter into the decision, what should the decision be based on. But again, when people are in the heat of emotion, they don't do that. There's more usually especially if it's negative emotion, there's more of an impulse to, I want to feel better right now. And so people will make decisions, which may be costly down the road, but they don't consider that aspect. Anger is another one that people make angry decisions, and they look for what gives us the biggest possible payoff in the short run, often not really considering what the risks and the downside of that choice are. They're just looking for something good and grabbing for it. You know, the high risk, high reward decisions are often costly in the long run, because the risk comes through and nullifies the value of the reward, or you don't even get the reward. Mm-hmm. So those are some.
Well, listen, I'm out of time. I wish we had another hour to discuss this, because this is a fascinating subject. So we'll have to do this again. This is really good. I really appreciate you, Roy, and I hope you have a lot of success with this book, The Science of Free Will. I want my audience to get this. Again, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate you.
Thanks for having me on, Ken. It's been a pleasure.
Okay. And stay in the green room for a second. I'd like to connect with you a little bit. For those of you that are watching this, you know, he wrote, Professor Roy Baumeister just gave you a real tip. I mean, if you listen to nothing else to that last conversation on the show about, you know, listen, if you're upset, you know, if you're too high or too low, and if you're in anger, you're depressed, you're in a place where you're emotional in some way, or you're in a place of low energy, or I would say even elevated energy, like too high, if you're too high or too low, you're probably going to make poor choices. That, you know, and if you understand that and you just say, I'm going to start to exercise choice around this. I'm going to choose to make really good choices when I'm in a place of good energy or neutral or whatever you say to yourself, and you feel that place that, yeah, I'm in a good state to make a good choice. Man, if you'll make your long-term choices, the big choices around that in that area, I can guarantee your life's going to get better and better. Well, I can't guarantee it, but I would think that it would get better and better. So I would hope that you would listen to what the professor just told us. And by the way, go get his book. It's a great book. I hope you get it. All right, from my heart to yours, continue to see the unseeable, know the unknowable, then you will be able to do the impossible, right? You'll get outside of your programming, get outside of your old thinking, expand and change and grow. That's what I'm talking about here. That's what the show's about. Hope you pass it on to your family and friends. Take care.